Good morning. You're listening to ARM, your favourite community radio station in the New England. And my name's Paul Tolley, and I'm delighted, as usual, every month to have the Mayor, Sam Copeland, with me in the studio. We're a little bit late this time, Sam, but we've got here. We've both had other issues and we've had a few struggles there, haven't we? But thank you.
We have. It's great to be back.
And thank you for coming in. Let's start off with a couple of openings, and these are things which the council is going to be delighted about. We've had the soft opening, but this is the hard opening, or the formal opening of the Demerick Dam this Saturday, tomorrow in fact.
Tomorrow, yes.
With a family beach party, lolly hunt, ice cream and a free barbecue. Are you chasing the lollies yourself?
Well, my idea around that was I'd arranged a lolly drop out of a crop duster. And that was all good to go. But then we had to change the date to fit in with the federal member, his schedule, and that unfortunately knocked out the crop duster. But we have a lolly hunt in its place. So, yes, it's a free sausage sizzle, free ice cream, and a lolly hunt. It'll be great.
And we're really, when we talk about the hard opening, but the bit that we're really doing is the public facility area, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Sorry, it's more so what we've really done is we've said we're opening the playground. So the reserve areas, not the dam wall that was fixed a year and a half ago. It's the recreation area, and I live nearby. I go out there a fair bit. I was out there this morning, and I did an interview on ABC Radio, my second favourite channel. Third favourite.
Just say that they're all your favourite. Politician, if you're putting out information.
So I was out there this morning just to have a look over it. So the thing that hasn't really been available to the public is the adventure playground. So for those of you listeners who haven't been out there, there's about six new undercover picnic areas. There's four new barbecues. There's a lot of new picnic tables under the trees. It's all been really well landscaped. I think there was something like 1,600 new trees and shrubs planted by the Armidale Tree Group. So the landscaping's terrific. There's camping.
And you know the path that goes round to the left, the last couple of times I've been out there, that's been closed. And I used to do the big walk around.
Oh, no, sorry. The walk around the dam is now complete. So, that was our family walk for a long time, so we'll be back on that. There's the jetty, there's the camping, there's the toilets, but with this particular project, we came in under budget, and so rather than give the money back to the government, we expanded and pimped up the playground, and that's terrific
how you
out
did
there.
It. No, and that's good news. And coming under budget's always a delight, isn't it?
It is.
The other opening is, and this is a much loved institution in Armidale, the Tip Shop, which closed, and I believe is now opening again.
Well, it has opened. It has opened.
Has opened.
It would have been probably 3 or 4 weeks ago
when I wrote this
that the tip shop was reopened. So I went out, and unfortunately, I was away that particular weekend, so I couldn't be there. But a number of my fellow councillors were. I've been out. I went out before the opening, so it's moved. It's in a different shed. Everything's really well laid out and organised, and so council is operating it on weekends at the moment. And once everything's bedded down, I suspect we will go out at some point and call for expressions of interest for a third party to operate it.
Makes sense to me, actually.
Yeah, it does. And it looks really good. It's going really well. It's there for the community, and as you said, it was a much loved.
You know, it's a way for people to get items cheaply, it recycles, it keeps material out of landfill, it just does so many good things, doesn't it?
Yep.
Now, that's great news. And especially, I guess, in this time of increased cost of living expenses, people can go and get something cheaply from the tip shop, and a lot of people did use it in that way.
They did, and I think that the timing of the closure last year prior to Christmas wasn't ideal from the point of view, as you say, a cost of living, you know, being able to get something cheap, you know, if you need another...
Bikes for the kids for Christmas.
Bikes for the kids for Christmas.
Always had bikes.
Another table. We've got, you know, rallies we didn't want or expect turning up, so we need an extra table. But also with those, what do we do with the, you know, post-Christmas gifts that could go elsewhere. Anyway,
all of that sort of thing. Now, we did talk about this in the past. What sort of public and business responses council had to the local strategic planning statement? You put that up for comment and reading, didn't you?
We did. So the exhibition period was extended. I think it was originally due to go to the 19th of March, and it was extended through to the end of March. So I haven't seen officially all of the feedback yet. That'll come to councillors on Wednesday, is when the business papers for the April meeting come out. And April's actually going to be a very full meeting. So, but I have seen a number come in around that. So that's where people have copied me in, or some of my fellow councillors in, just on their response. Look, some of those responses I think have been, you know, pretty on point and need to change a bit. Some others probably misunderstood the purpose of that local strategic planning statement. Others had a very single issue
approach
to it. You know, either you're advocating this, I think that's bad, or you're not advocating something. So anyway, all of that feedback's good. So I'll be really interested to see it, because it's such an important document. And
we talked about one aspect of it, which was the intention, perhaps is the right word I'll pick, to not lock anything in to get to 40,000 or 50,000 and increase economies of scale for council and for Armidale in general. So, and that's one aspect. The reason I brought it up with you is because population growth is always a concern for a certain group who want to keep things as they are.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And I suspect there'll be a fair bit of that in there as well. But the real audience for the strategic planning statement is the state government. And I may have mentioned this last time. We have to go off and get sign-off from about 8 or 9 different government bodies. And if they agree with the intent of that planning statement, i.e. Armidale has a coherent and reasonable and, you know, integrated plan to grow to 40,000, then they will change their predictions. At the moment, they predict we will not grow because we haven't grown for 30 years, which means all of the carry-on that we might have about lack of services, if, for example, medical, etc., medical, transport, etc., it honestly falls on deaf ears. If they think you're not growing, they're going to put all of their resources and their money into areas that are.
So this has an impact on state government funding, doesn't it?
Of course. Mm. That is the whole purpose behind this. Mm. So if you've been a council that's just rolled the arm over and made a whole bunch of platitude statements, they're not going to be convinced that you're growing. But we are in front of the bodies at the moment. Whilst it hasn't been finalised, we've shown them the draft. This is where we're thinking we need that. We need that sign off. We need the state government to be convinced that our population growth projections are feasible, doable, and there's valid reasons behind it. So it's not the detailed plan that some people may have, you know, think is missing. So when you're criticising,
that's why I used the word intention, actually.
Yeah, and it has to be intention, but there has to be some realistic things behind it, and there has to be some studies behind it as well, and that's what this one has.
And you know, one of the reasons that people are hesitant about these things, because they've seen or heard of or know of too many occasions where developers come in, they open up land for sale for housing, no access to schools, no access to public transport, access to anything, really.
Yeah,
it's just a bunch of houses, and this is, I think, what creates concern.
Look, it does, but if the state government doesn't think we're growing, they're not going to put the money into the schools. They're not going to put the money into the healthcare. It's as simple as that. We might think we're entitled to it, or, you know, we should have it because we look at Sydney and we see what Sydney has, but frankly,
we're not Sydney.
We're not Sydney. No. We're not Camden, which is the fastest growing LGA. Mm. They're putting out, I think,
for those that don't know, that's to the southwest of
Sydney. So I was talking to the general manager of Camden, and something like there's 140 new houses, or actually he said it in terms of rubbish bin collections, 140 new rubbish bin collections every week in Camden. That is just how quickly that area is growing.
And that's goes back to what I was talking about, which is the facility and the support networks, and also it's got to be paid for, of course, by someone.
It does,
Let's go to another one. I'm going to be a bit blunt here, but I know that most residents and business owners would agree with me. The mall is a mess.
Yeah,
and we're
it is.
Predominantly talking about the East Mall, but the whole area needs to be integrated, of course. You can't just do one and ignore what goes on around it. East Mall plans went on display on the 1st of March, I think it was, after council agreed to endorse the draft detailed design concept plan for the East Mall. Is it too early to judge responses to that one, apart from the current situation is a mess?
No, so there's going to be some of that feedback has come through. We are going to have and I think something's coming up in the next week or so. There's going to be another planning session to take into account all of that feedback, and we'll see how we go. So because we have the plan, doesn't mean it's going to be done now. So what happened is that we received a developer contribution from somebody that's doing some development in the East Mall, and we thought the best way to apply that developer contribution would be to spend some money dusting off some plans, refining them, getting business owners in the East Mall involved in the process as well, so that we've got something that is, in inverted commas, shovel ready. To quote Kevin Rudd, should the grant fairy rain down upon us?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I believe, and I actually once upon a time started doing architecture and town planning at uni and dropped it, but communities or towns or hamlets of any size that have a definable town centre with some character and a place which feels welcoming and that people want to go to seem to thrive, and the businesses thrive. And we know, and I know two people with businesses in the East Mall, people don't feel welcome there. It's not an inviting place to be. Now, we've got the stage in the West Mall opposite the post office. We know that there are, sometime in the future, there's going to be development of the old courthouse building. Things feel more welcoming and inviting in that part of town, but it just doesn't cross the road, does it?
No, it doesn't.
And we need it, that town centre vibe is a powerful thing.
Oh, what you say is absolutely true. That you do need that nucleus that, all the energy radiates from, but I guess through a combination of decisions over many, many decades, we actually have a very spread out, even the CBD itself spread out. Then if you, we're from a dining point of view, and I'll probably get shot for saying this, we're probably a bit of a pub type place, and our pubs are scattered all around.
With two right down the other end of town, the Grand and the other one down
that's right. The Grand town. And the railway down that end. We have, the Royal and the Wicklow, the Royal and the White Bull just sort of outside. Well, I guess the White Bull's, that you could say optimistically, is at the end of the East Mall.
And the few restaurants that have changed hands a number of times on the other side of the road from the White Bull.
So I agree, and it's no surprise.
And parking's part of the issue, isn't it?
Apparently, yes. Yes, so
I think won't be people quite avoid right. That area of town because it's impossible.
There's 15 parks, and is that enough? So that was certainly something that came out of the consultation. So I imagine we will see more parking in the revised plans, and we'll just get those plans dusted off.
And hopefully a more visibly welcoming, a more pleasant streetscape. It's not.
Well, there is a streetscape, but there's also the shop fronts as well. Some of them aren't good looking, and I'll think of it's either Ten Tops or one of those things that's actually made its entrance, from the Coles car park.
Well, that makes sense to them because that's where there's parking.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. But it's not welcoming.
It's not welcoming in the mall, but from their business perspective, they've got the entrance where the people can park.
Yes. Anyway,
makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm interested in that space because of my personal interest in attractive and interesting streetscapes and architecture. We'll see what happens there. This will be a delight for a lot of people. South Armidale United Football Club and did a joint application with the Armidale and District Cricket Association. And it looks like we're going to get a bit of undercover portable seating at the Armidale Sports Ground.
Yeah, that'd be great. So that's come out of the Sports Council report, and so the different clubs will, you know, put applications in for grants. Councils often be a co-partner in those grant applications, so that, you know, the funding bodies know that it is consistent with the overall community expectation. And council often is the, you know, the body that administers the funds and does the admin behind it. So, yeah, that's great. The more grant funding, the better. I think it's grant funding is harder and harder to come by.
Indeed, so, and a lot of sport is the participants are younger people from school age up. Mm. We know netball's got its own discrete area, and they up in Lynch's Road there, and they have that going well, and they've got lighting, and
yes,
new lighting.
Yeah, yeah.
But being able to, particularly with an Armidale winter, to be able to go and watch your family members or your kids or whoever playing sport and sit down
is attractive.
It's very appealing. Yeah,
I have kids that play hockey, and one's about to start playing netball again. And during the depths of a winter, I think we could do Antarctic training up there at the Lynch's Road netball court sometimes.
Well, undercover portable seating has got to be a win
for
a lot of people, and that's a good one. This is a curious one, but I see that there's a move or a potential move to close the entrance to the visitor's centre from Marsh Street.
Mm. Mm.
And my question then goes on to, well, if we close that, are we going to have buses and coaches trying to come in opposite the Coles car park entrance there?
Well, I guess that is the only entrance and exit there. I am not exactly sure why that's been done. When the transport, the traffic committee makes these decisions, it involves the police, the Department of Transport, as well as council. So if I'm scratching my memory here, but I think it was a lot of people coming out the wrong way, which it really is meant to be to enter that way. There's the possibility of unintended consequences. I'm sure they've thought through all of that. But it's one of those things. If it works, great. If it doesn't, well, it's not the end of the world. Everything's fixable.
Hopefully. I mean, I went and had a look, and it is marked as an entrance, yes, not as an exit. And the arrow points in only one direction from Mars Street. So it may well be that this is a response to people doing the wrong thing.
I know it is a response to people doing the wrong thing.
So if people want to keep it, do the right thing.
Yeah. Let's just blame the out-of-towners.
That's very politically wise of you. We talked about this, and it's a great thing, but where are we up to with the proposed Armidale and Gyra sale yards infrastructure upgrades?
So a tenderer, so that went out to tender.
Yes, it did.
For a while, we received all the tenders. I'm saying that would have been in February. The one that was most attractive was actually priced and it was the most cost effective, was actually priced beyond the amount of money we have to spend. So we're now in negotiation with that group to change the scope, to work out what can be taken out to fit within the funding envelope that we have.
Is it possible to stage it?
That'll be
so certain, that some goes into the budget that's available now, and further can be committed at a later stage.
It is, but is long and short. These, you know, it's not this sort of thing. Apparently, happens quite regularly. You know, from the council side and also the contractor side, they sort of know, well, you know, what were the nice to haves and what are the essentials. We'll do the essentials now and take the nice to haves out,
or postpone.
Yeah, or postpone, and you know, it's ready to go if when again the money's available. So I'm not privy to what those discussions are, because that's operational.
Yes, of course.
That will come back. Once they've landed on something, I wouldn't be surprised if this appears in the April council meeting.
I mean, it's good for the rural community, but it's also good for Armidale, because when you have a good facility like this that brings people into town, they have lunch in town, or they have a drink in town, or they have a coffee in town.
I think conceptually, yes. I think, and I know there's a few of my fellow councillors think the same, I think the Armidale sale yards are in the wrong spot.
I suspect that's the case as well. That getting to town for a meal is a little difficult, but we all know that when farmers come to town, they catch up, because they don't get to catch up on the property because your neighbours can be a long way away. So all of those things are beneficial.
It is good. I think the sale yards need to be probably off the highway somewhere. And not in what is really a bit of a sporting precinct.
And a backwater, as far as that's concerned. It is.
But, you know, that's just a case of legacy. You know, when the sale yards were built, I don't know when, 50, 60 years ago, it was probably a really logical place.
Well, there is the development up around the airport, isn't there?
There is. You know, and I see it in a little town like Warwick. It's got an abattoir that's really right now in residential area. You wouldn't, you know, that's not where they envisaged things to go, but that's legacy issues.
And it's interesting you bring that up, because I used to go and buy a full round of cheese when I drove to Brisbane once upon a time. Wonderful from the Warwick Cheese Factory, which of course no longer exists in the form that it did back then. They had a wonderful aged cheddar. I'd buy the whole thing and we'd cut it up when I got back to Sydney amongst the
fruit. I love cheese. I used to dream of being locked in a cheese room.
No, me as well. I love cheese as well. But, I mean, being serious, the expense is probably prohibitive, but moving the sale yard to the airport development would probably make a lot of sense, because it's on and off the highway, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Something like that. It does make sense that it's out of the way. Anyway, up there off the highway would make sense. I mean, when sale yards, when these ones were originally built, B-doubles didn't exist. Most people came in small body trucks. And anyway.
There's something going on at the Weeds Authority. Now, I'm going to have to say I'm not quite sure what it is, and I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but something's going on here, according to my information.
I think you're
off the ground.
Well, your clandestine informants are probably on the money. So I can tell you.
Can I just backtrack? Sorry to interrupt you, but many people may not know, but the Weeds Authority is controlled by council. Just to explain why I'm asking you.
So the New England Weeds Authority has four member. It's a county council, and it has four member councils. The beneficial owners of it. So that being Glen Innes, Armidale, Eurella, and Walker. And there's been a cash crunch at the New England Weeds Authority, and that's probably been brought about from two perspectives. The first one is, and this has affected every Weeds Authority in New South Wales, so councils are responsible for maintaining weeds in the region. And
well, not so much maintaining as...
Sorry, looking after, making sure they don't proliferate.
controlling.
Control, thank you. And so it, quite often different regions get together and pool the resources for economies of scale. And that's what the New England Weeds Authority is. The state government has historically provided funding via its Weeds Action Plan. So WAP funding, it's called, and that usually runs about $300,000 or $400,000 a year. Usually gets paid. It's announced in July, the beginning of the financial year. It's usually paid about December. We're now in April and it hasn't been paid. So the state government has withheld about $300,000 or $400,000 from not just the New England weeds, but everyone in New South Wales. So that's caused quite a bit of consternation. So that is problem number one. I think our Minister for Regional New South Wales and our Agriculture Minister is one and the same. And I've had my run-ins with her, and I cannot for the life of me understand why an agriculture minister would just spring this surprise on people. Why she wouldn't say, all right, we'll pay you this year, but next year you're not going to, it's not coming.
Or we'll talk about it.
Or we'll talk about it. But it seems to be a case where she's stuck her fingers in her ears and gone, la, 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 la.
But this has a flow on for wages and
of course it does.
And also it's not just weed control.
Now, and the state government isn't the biggest funder of it. Mm-hmm. So each council has to tip in. So each council, the combined amount, I think, is a bit over, around $700,000, of which Armidale contributes $340,000. So the councils themselves, who are responsible for, as you say, controlling the weeds, also have to put money in. That's fine. But without the WAP funding, or that Weeds Action Plan funding, they've drawn down on reserves. Now they're running behind. They've also built a new building.
Out near the airport.
Out near the airport. And funding that, where they thought they'd be able to fund it, those doors have closed. So this is all on public record. So the councils have been asked to provide a guarantee to the bank to allow some funding to occur.
So it's a watch this space at the moment.
It is a bit of a watch this space. You know, all going well, that should just wash through. The guarantee will never need to be called upon, and away we go. But I suspect there's some internal challenges there that need some ironing out. But we've got Armidale has three of our councillors sit on the board of New England Weeds Authority. The other three councils have a councillor each, so there's a total of six on the board there. And it really is up to that board to ensure that management is doing what it's meant to do.
Let's finish off with acknowledging that since we last spoke, Adam Marshall, the local state member, has stated that he's resigning, and he's been a help to council in terms of getting funding. Mm. So,
yeah,
probably say that'll be an interesting change as well.
Yeah, it certainly will. State local government really relies on state government funding. So you need to have a good and functional relationship with your local member. And secondly, your local member needs to be, or your state member needs to be able to, you know, talk to whoever the ministers are in power to get get that access. And that's one thing that Adam has certainly been able to do. And regardless of your political stripe, you cannot deny that he has been a very effective and a great communicator. I think he's been a very good representative of our region. But more importantly, and I've seen this since there was a change of government, he can open doors, whereas a lot of other coalition MPs aren't accepted in. I was down in Sydney middle of March to see the Minister for Regional Transport. Adam had lined that meeting up, and we got there. I was there with my deputy, Todd Redwood, and also the Mayor and Deputy of Glen Innes. And when we got there, Adam said, listen, I've also lined up a meeting with the Premier, the Minister for Energy, and the Treasurer.
And that's what a good member does.
And it's what Adam does. And the Premier made the point to me. He said, you fellows do realise that not everyone gets to do this. So anyway, so full credit to him. I really hope whoever takes that job on, and it'll be a really interesting election to see who stands. I really hope who takes that on. Actually, not hope. I'm going to make these are the essentials for our region to continue to thrive. We need somebody in there that can advocate effectively,
and fighting for the region,
fighting for the region. Government. Yep, yeah, well, yep. Yeah. They're not partisan. They're somebody who can open doors, do the right thing. It's going to be interesting, and it's going to be essential that we get it right.
Another watch of space. Mayor, thank you very much for coming in again. As always, we appreciate the fact that you give time to 2ARM and discuss these things, and we'll look forward to next month.
Yeah, terrific. Thanks, Paul.